Now we come to chapter 2, and I've labeled chapter 2 the first beauty contest. And here we have it. And in chapter 2, verse 1, after these things, after what things? Well, the things that have taken place in chapter 1, plus the fact that this campaign was carried on. Apparently, Xerxes couldn't get the queen to do what he wanted him to, but he got all the princes in the kingdom to join with him now in a great campaign against Greece. Now we have to turn to secular history to fill this in, because there's no record here. It just says after these things. Well, here are some of the things. This man, Xerxes, led a great army, and he crossed over into Europe. And he met the Greeks at Thermopylae, and that was unfortunate because the secret of the strength of the Persians was in numbers. The individual soldiers were not so much. They were not well trained as the Greeks were, and the Greek had emphasized the person, the individual, and as a result, one Greek soldier could have taken care of 10 Persians. And so at the Battle of Thermopylae, only a few could get in the pass. And as a result, the Greeks got a signal victory over the Persians. It's not unfortunate from my viewpoint, but it was unfortunate for Xerxes that he carried on the battle at the place where he was doomed to lose. God had already said the power was to pass from Persia to Greece. And if you want to know whether God intervened or not, this man Xerxes had 300 ships that had gone around to come in from the rear to attack, and they were in the bay at Salamis. And it just looked as if the next day, why, they would land and the attack would be from the rear, and they'd win that. But during the night, a storm came up, and it sank all 300 of the Persian ships. None were left. And all of the manpower they had was destroyed, was drowned. So that this man Xerxes now, he's been defeated, very much defeated. And so this man, in that condition, comes back to his palace here at Shushan. He walks up and down after these things. When the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, and what was decreed against her. Now, the law of the Medes and Persians can't be changed. Even the law that this king made, he himself cannot alter it nor change it. In that drunkard stupor, he had set aside this beautiful queen, and now he can never again have her. And after his defeat, in his loneliness, he walks up and down the palace, and he's moody. And not only that, this man had a mental aberration, as we shall see, and he's thinking of Vashti. And the servants there know it, and they are watching him, and they know something now must be done. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king. Let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan the palace, to the house of the women, under the custody of Hegai, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their beautifying ointments be given them. In other words, these servants suggest a beauty contest. And now, who's going to win it? Who's going to win this contest? Well, why is this all given to us? God's letting you know that he's moving in the affairs of man, even in this pagan palace. He's going to overrule what's taking place. Now we come to the fourth verse of this second chapter, and I'm going to read it. And their thought was, and let the maiden who pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. Now in Shushan the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. We now come to the story in verse 5. All that we've had before has just been the window dressing. has been the stage props. We were taken into a pagan heathen court, and we were introduced to the happenings there for a very definite purpose. It explains this beauty contest, and the beauty contest explains how Esther came to the throne. And because Esther came to the throne, why, it enabled her to intervene and intercede in behalf of her people, and an entire people would have been exterminated at that time had she not been there. Now we begin to see that it was the hand of God moving back in this palace. As we looked in, I called attention to the fact I see nothing spiritual there. It's as godless as anything possibly could be. It's a drunken orgy that's taking place. But God's overruling it. And now we are beginning to see what this book teaches. It teaches the providence of God. And God was arranging these events so that at the proper time, he'd have someone there to intervene on behalf of his people. And that becomes very important. Now somebody is going to raise the question about this beauty contest, because they're going to say, well, Esther entered the contest. You mean to tell me God approves of beauty contests? Well, my answer is very candidly, no, I don't think he does. But my friend, when a child of God gets out of the will of God, gets way out yonder, God permits many things that he does not approve. And he will overrule through these events that the Christian is doing today that he does not approve. And again, it leads me to say this. One of the things that's important in the little book of Esther is to see that God does overrule, and that most Christians today are living way out yonder on the fringe of the will of God. They're not really being directed by the will of God. They're not what we call in the will of God. They're way out there where God is directing them by his providence. And sometimes we call that the leading of God. Well, only indirectly. And this girl now that enters this contest is an illustration here of the permissive will of God. Now we are introduced to this man, Mordecai. And he belonged to the royal family of Israel. He belonged to the family of Saul, for also Kish was the father of Saul. And now this man belonged to that royal group, and one of the other evidences of it is, verse 6, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captives who had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And that delegation, actually Nebuchadnezzar came three times against Jerusalem, and it was in these first two times that he came that he carried away the best of the people. That is, he carried away the princes and the leaders. Now, this man, Mordecai, belonged to that group. Apparently, as we shall see, he must have been a little boy at that time, but nevertheless, he belonged to that family, and he belonged to the family of Saul. Now, we are told here, he brought up Hadassah, that is, Esther. And Hadassah and Esther mean the same thing. Esther means star, by the way, and she certainly was a star, apparently a very beautiful woman. And we're told here that she was actually the stepdaughter of Mordecai. He brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took her for his own daughter. So he's raising this girl in his home, and she's a very beautiful girl. Now, he had a position here in the palace, by the way. We are told that the first thing about him, he was in Shushan the palace. And the question arises right here, the one question we'd like to ask him, what are you doing here in Shushan the palace? You ought to be back there in Jerusalem. God has given a decree for your folk to return. And that's where you should be. And here you are in a foreign country. Why don't you get back there? Well, he's out of the will of God, you see. And the name of God won't be mentioned in this book. He's not here at all. Not in name. But you'll see that his fingerprints are here. And not only that, but someone has defined providence as it's the hand of God in the glove of circumstances. And believe me, his hand's moving in the glove of circumstances. And friend, that's true in your life, and it's true in my life also. Now, he was in the palace. He had some minor position there. And in this minor position, he was able, though, to see these different girls as they came from the different sections of the empire. And he always made note of that, and I think made a comparison. I think he said to himself many times, well, that girl is not near as beautiful as my stepdaughter Esther is. And so as we move down through this section here, why, he is very much concerned now about entering her in the contest. And when he saw that she would be a winner, or at least he thought she would, he didn't know that. We are told, so it came to pass when the king's commandment and his decree were heard, and when many maidens were gathered together under Shushan the palace to the custody of Hegai, that Esther was brought also unto the king's house to the custody of Hegai, keeper of the women. Now this man had charge of the contest, and these girls came, and Mordecai saw that each day, and he came to the conclusion that his stepdaughter Esther had a good chance. So he entered her in the contest, and I'm sure that she was for it. Now, let's be very candid. I must say that at this particular juncture, I do not have too much respect for this man, Mordecai. But I want to hasten and say this to you. I'm going to change my mind, and I'll eat my words, and I wish I hadn't said what I'm saying now, but I despise him for what he's doing now. To begin with, he's disobeying God. God had told his people not to intermarry. He's definitely breaking the Mosaic law when he entered this girl, with the idea she'd become the queen of the king. And then the second thing, we'll discover that any girl that did not win had to enter the harem of the king. She became a concubine. We'll see that. Now, that's exposing this girl to an awful life, and he's willing to take that risk. And at this point, I do not have too much respect for Mordecai, but I want to say this now, lest you get a wrong impression. I'll change my mind. Fact of the matter is, before we're through, I feel like throwing my hat in the air and cheering him, because I think he took a stand for God, and I think probably we're going to be able to see that next time. Now, let's move on down in this section. It's getting interesting now, I hope, because Esther's being entered into the contest. She's turned over to the one in charge, Hegai. Now, verse 9, and the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness from him, and he speedily gave her her ointments for beautification. Women haven't changed either. And there was a great deal of makeup used. And I hope no one's going to take issue with me about the use of makeup and about whether she should enter this contest. Now, very candidly, I don't think she should have entered the contest. And we're going to find out she didn't need makeup. There are a great many extremists in this department today. A dear lady came to me when I was pastor in downtown Los Angeles, and I talked down there in the Institute. She came to me one day, and she thought that some of the girls there were using too much makeup. And she said that she didn't think a Christian ought to use makeup. And, of course, she put me out on a limb and says, what do you think? Well, I said, very candidly, let's go into who the woman is. I said, I know some women that makeup would improve them. And I think we all ought to do the best we can with what God's given to us. And I says that some women that don't use makeup look like witches to me. She took that personally. And I want to add this. She had reason to do that, too. I felt like saying to her, a little makeup later would improve you a great deal. Now, I hope you don't want to argue about that, because all of this is actually out of the will of God, but God is permitting this, and it's by his providence now that she has been accepted by this man in charge. I think when he looked at her, he liked her very much, and he said, boy, she looks like a winner. So he put her up front, and that was a step. You say, well, that's an accident. Oh, no, friends. God, by his providence, overrules down here in our lives. Now, there was given to her such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens who were suitable to be given her out of the king's house, and he removed her and her maidens unto the best place of the house of the women. Now, that's by the providence of God. She's put up in number one slot. Now, verse 10, Esther had not revealed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not make it known. Now, suppose she had made it known. Well, these people were well known in that area. They were people who, we'll find out later, the enemy said they got strange laws. And they worshiped the living and the true God. They did not worship idols, and that was known. And the minute that she'd reveal her nationality, she would reveal her religion. And these people are out of the will of God, and when you are, you don't boast of your testimony. When you're out of the will of God, you're not apt to be a testimony for the Lord. Remember old Jonah on board that ship running away from God? He hadn't told them he was a Hebrew. You know why? Because he'd given himself away, and he wasn't about to do that. And he's quite a talkative fellow himself, by the way. Now, Mordecai told her not to, reveal who she was. Now, will you notice? And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. Now, I have been told that when you're in the will of God, that you can just sit back and rest. And that you can, you know, say, well, I'm in the Lord's will, and we'll let things just work out. Well, when you're not in the Lord's will, you're not going to be able to take that position. If you do, it'll sure be a false position. And Mordecai knew that he was out of the will of God. And so what did he do? Sit down and wait for the decision? No. Every day he walked up and down in front of the palace wondering how this thing would come out. Wondering whether if he hadn't made a terrible blunder and mistake in doing this, and he had already bitten his fingernails back to his elbows, he is absolutely frightened of the thing that he's done, and he's worried sick. He's not sleeping at night, that is for sure. That's the condition of Mordecai. And when you're out of the will of God, you're not apt to rest back on your laurels and say, everything will be all right. I'm the will of God. Now, I recognize some people deceive themselves on that. I remember a man that had cancer, and his wife rather rebuked me for not trusting the Lord. She said, we are resting in the Lord, and the Lord won't let him die, and all that type of thing. And if you're not trusting the Lord because you've been going to the doctors and you're resting on them. Well, the only difference is he's not alive today, and I still am. I believe that you can be in the Lord's will and go to the doctor, and I can assure you that's what I intend to do. And this idea of taking a false position and calling it faith, sometimes faith is not faith at all. It's foolishness. And God has never asked anyone to take a leap in the dark. Faith always rests upon fact. And here, this man's definitely out of the will of God. He hasn't anything to rest on at all. Now will you notice, verse 12. Now when every maid's turn was come to go into King Ahasuerus, after she had been 12 months according to the regulations for the women, for so were the days of their beautification accomplished, to wit, 6 months with oil of myrrh, and 6 months with sweet odors and with balms, for the beautifying of the women. Now, I've always felt that beauty parlors are misnamed. I tell my wife, you go in there looking, I think, very good, and you come out looking like a peeled onion. or you look like the end of a mop that has been overused. I wouldn't want to call them beauty parlors. And I know that there are many men that spend a lot of time waiting for their wives. My wife can spend a long time in a beauty parlor. But my friend, here we have 6 months for one type of treatment, 6 months for another. That's 1 year in a beauty parlor. And I told my wife one day when I waited 40 minutes outside and I hadn't come until, well, the time she'd set, I still waited 40 minutes. And when she came out, I said, "My, you must be Queen Esther to spend that much time in a beauty parlor." Well, this is quite a beauty treatment, friends, 1 year. Now will you notice, verse 13, "Then thus came every maiden unto the king. Whatever she desired was given her to go with her out of the house of the women unto the king's house. In the evening she went, on the next day she returned unto the second house of the women." Now listen to this. "To the custody of Sheashgaz, the king's chamberlain who kept the concubine." You see, if the girl didn't win the contest, she became a concubine. She came in unto the king no more, except the king delighted in her, and that she was called by name. You see what Mordecai had exposed Esther to? And apparently she was perfectly willing to do this. Now we're told in verse 15, "Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her to his daughter, was come to go into the king, she required nothing but what Hegai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed, and Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them who looked upon her." Now, it was decided that Esther did not need to have a year's beauty treatment. Hers was a natural beauty. And they said, "My, that's like gilding a lily to send her to the beauty parlor. She's already beautiful and lovely." And everyone that saw her, they said, "My, there's the winner. That's the girl that's going to win." She just stood out above everyone else, you see. And again, is the hand of God moving? Yes. And this is the will of God? No, sir. This is God moving by his providence. He's going to put her yonder on the throne next to the king, because if she's not there, their whole nation is going to be destroyed. Not only that, God will be violating his word. And you want to know something? God never violates his word. Now, let's begin reading then here at verse 16. "So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus into his house royal in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti." Now, she's the winner. And again, how did she become winner? Was that by chance or accident? I don't think so. I think that it was by the providence of Almighty God. As we'll see in this next chapter, it was essential that God go before and make arrangements to protect his people. And this is the way that he did it. And he gives us this background, I think, for that reason and that reason alone. That is the explanation of why I see no spiritual interpretation in chapter 1 when we are just introduced into a great pagan palace and the banqueting hall where drunken orgies taking place. I see no spiritual significance there. All I see is that God is going to overrule, and God by his providence will overrule man down here, and he's going to overrule Satan also. Now, that ought to be a comfort to God's children today. Now she's become queen. "Then the king made a great feast unto all his princes and his servants, even Esther's feast, and he made a release from taxes to the provinces, and gave gifts according to the bounty of the king." And in other words, he cut the taxes. She was so pretty, and he was so delighted with her, that he cut the tax bill of everyone. And I wish we could have some kind of a contest in Washington today if this would help reduce taxes. But all they do is increase the taxes, not decrease them. But the king did that. And when the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai sat in the king's gate. Esther had not yet revealed her kindred nor her people, as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther had the commandment of Mordecai just as when she was brought up with him. Now, this is a very interesting incident that's recorded here. This girl, she becomes queen. She was beautiful. And it was her beauty that attracted this man to her. And I think there's quite a contrast here between Esther and Ruth, for instance. Back in the book of Ruth, this man loved her. But I think that it was not just simply because of her beauty. Esther won on that basis and that basis alone. Now, the very interesting thing is here that Mordecai, who had some sort of a small position in the palace, he's now at the king's gate. And what does that mean? Well, the king's gate is where the judges sat. Remember old Lot down in Sodom? He was sitting in the gate. He had become a judge down there. And here's Mordecai, all of a sudden, is elevated from some minor position in the palace, maybe bookkeeper or something, and here he is out here, and he's a judge. Well, he's a Supreme Court judge, if you please. The courthouse in that day was not in the center of the town and in the center of the square, as it was in my little town where I was born. And I'm sure that most of us were born in a county seat where the courthouse is in the center. But in that day, it was always at the gate for the simple reason there's a wall around the city, and everyone either came or went through the gate. And so this was the place where they congregated, and this man now is sitting in the gate. And the question arises, how did this man, Mordecai, suddenly become a judge when he had just a very small position? Was it because of his ability? Well, by the way, I think he's a man of real ability, but I don't think he got it that way. You see, Esther has just recently become queen, and I have a notion it happened something like this. The queen was sitting next to the king one day, and there was a lull in the business, and he began to talk with her, and she said, by the way, you have a man here in your kingdom, a man of real ability. Fact of the matter is, he raised me, and he's a very excellent man. He'd make a good judge if you ever have an opening. And the king says, well, that's quite interesting. I just had an opening. I'm firing one of them. I'll be glad to make him judge. And all of a sudden, Mordecai finds himself elevated to a place of judge. That's called nepotism today, and still the same thing. I went to visit a friend of mine who'd been elected to office, and I found out the whole family was working in the office. They all had jobs, by the way. There's many that are like that today. I guess that's human nature, but this is interesting. Now, that's another little incident that takes place that's rather important here. We see in verse 21, in those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those who kept the door, were angry, and they sought to lay hands on the king, Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther informed the king of it in Mordecai's name. When inquiry was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Now, this is quite an interesting incident. This man Mordecai was sitting at the gate. The crowds were coming and going through the gates. There were two men that he heard talking. He heard them mention the name of the king. And he cupped his ears so he could hear, and they were talking about a plot to kill the king. And so Mordecai immediately got word to Esther. And Esther, sitting on the king's right side, why, she reached over and said to him, said, by the way, you sure didn't make a mistake making this man Mordecai the judge that you have. And look what he's done. He's already discovered two men that are in your employ that are plotting to put you to death. And so the king says, well, I'll get the Secret Service investigating that immediately. And they investigated and they found out it is true. And so what happened? Why, they arrested these fellas, and they didn't have a long, drawn-out trial. Again, it spent taxpayers' money. The king just ordered them to be put to death, and they were executed summarily. But that discouraged any others from attempting to plot against the king. Of course, they were very uncivilized in that day, and they just didn't go in for lawlessness and tampering criminals. They executed them immediately. But the thing that's important for us is that was written down in the chronicles of the king, the log, as it were, the minutes, if you please, of the kingdom. But no mention was made of a reward to this man Mordecai because no recognition or reward was given to him. And I'm of the opinion that he probably turned that over in his mind several times. Well, I saved the king's life, and he could have at least have sent me a Boy Scout badge. He could have sent me a lifesaver button of some sort. Certainly, I would deserve that. Well, very candidly, the thing was passed by. And why? Well, all of these things are taking place. God is giving this to us to let us know that he's overruling this. God, by his providence, is directing all of this.